Welcome to SEC Sports Roundtable, Episode 61. The Mystery Machine drives through Alabama. Recorded Monday, November 12th, 2012. On this week's episode, Shane Bailey is joined by Blair Smiley and a brand new host to the podcast, Chris Gray. Duly all done at Tennessee, James Franklin and the Commodores took a few weeks off, but looked to be much improved. LSU recovers from last week, but Johnny Football had something to say about Alabama's quest to repeat as national champions. All this and more on this week's SEC SRT. All right, welcome to SEC Sports Roundtable. This is your host, Shane Bailey, back at you for another exciting week in the SEC. Joined with me tonight is regular host Blair Smiley. Welcome, Blair.
It's good to be back, Shane.
That's your regular little tagline. I figured it out. You know, if you do this long enough and you start working with the actual text version of this for closed captioning, you say that every time. So thank you for that. I can always get that part right. Also to the round table tonight, a newbie, a first-time person, and can be seen on the YouTube channel as a LSU supporter. Welcome, Chris Gray, to the podcast.
Hey, thanks for having me, Shane.
Hey, we're glad to have some new blood from Baton Rouge area to have some fans down there for those Cajuns down there. Wish we could have had you a week earlier. Had some real exciting stuff from you there, but still glad to have you. We're going to get right into things this week. Catch you up to speed just a little bit. If you are new to the podcast, welcome. We're so glad you found us. It is a podcast dedicated to SEC sports. We talk football. We talk a little basketball. We talk just a little baseball, only because there's nothing else to talk about in the middle of May. But that doesn't last long, and we get right back into football. But we do a weekly podcast dedicated to the major sports in the SEC. In doing so, you can find us a number of different ways. We do iTunes, Stitcher. We are on Facebook and Twitter, as well as we do a YouTube version of this where we record this live. You're welcome to watch this as we record. We tweet that out to let people know that we are recording. So you're welcome to follow us any of those ways, as well as the website, secsrt.com. So that's it with the housekeeping issues that I always try to get out of the way quickly. But get right into the action, and we'll talk about last week's games. I don't think there was much going on in the SEC. Oh, wait, that's this week's games. There was a pretty exciting little matchup, and you know, I don't want to spoil it and maybe keep an extra listener or two for 5 or 10 minutes, so we'll hold off on the big game of the week. But, you know, Blair, you were just mentioning as we were doing some pre-show prep, and Chris, I don't know if you were here when we joined that part of the discussion, but Ole Miss kind of had that game pretty much at hand going into the fourth quarter with Vanderbilt, and things just didn't happen the way Ole Miss thought they would. That was kind of Ole Miss of old, don't you think, Blair?
Yeah, I mean, you know, one of the things Ole Miss had coming into the week is they had just kind of gotten off a pretty tough game last week and were beaten up a little bit, and I think they had four, if I'm not mistaken, four players, starters down for the game, and said a couple in the back end of the defense, and they had a couple of breakdowns, including that horrible communication breakdown on that last touchdown throw there with, what, about 50 seconds left, if I remember correctly, for Vandy to go up. And, you know, it was a game that, you know, for two teams – with an opportunity to go to get bowl eligible with two games going. Of those two teams, I think Ole Miss was the one that needed to win that one because Vanderbilt has a couple opportunities coming up that are a little bit easier than what Ole Miss's next two opponents will be. So, but we'll see how that actually goes. But it was fantastic for me.
Yeah, Vanderbilt's going to have Tennessee this week and Kentucky.
No.
They already had, that's right. They've already had Kentucky 40-0. How could I forget? Yeah. but Ole Miss this week has LSU,
yeah.
And then they're followed up by a team that you follow closely there at the Egg Bowl. So
that's right.
So they are going to have a tough go to get that extra win that they really need to finish up the season. You know, Chris, did you get to watch any of that game there?
The Ole Miss Vanderbilt game? No, I tended to was more focused on what was going on with LSU there. I did, however, I follow Vandy a little bit just because I like to see that team do well. I feel like they could be the SEC's version of Stanford. So I didn't get a chance to catch that, except for I did hear of Jordan Rogers' heroics kind of finally showing some of that brilliance that we were hoping that maybe trickled down from his brother.
Yeah, his brother was actually there in at the game, so I had a week off and was actually on the field. But the unique thing about Vandy, earlier in the year when, Franklin kind of shut the quarterbacks off from the media, wouldn't allow them to speak, and then he actually set Rogers down during, who did they play, Presbyterian or somebody, earlier in the year, and backup quarterback actually played the full game.
You're correct.
And it was, basically a benching is what actually happened. And, looking back, he took a lot of heat during that time, shutting off the players from talking to the media. But it's obviously spun something. And I think when we did the podcast before they played Missouri, that was a game where, earlier in the year, they're going to get bowl eligible. They're going to need to start somewhere, and they were going to have to come up with a win at the time that we thought they wouldn't get. And they got that first win against Missouri, and they've been on a nice little string ever since. But they're playing well right now. And who's to say? I mean, they've got a great shot of beating Tennessee, and they got a really good shot of beating Wake Forest again back at their place. So, who would have thought 4 or 5 weeks ago that Vanderbilt could have a shot at 8 wins after the way they started the season?
Well, I know we were talking on the podcast, would they even be able to be bowl eligible with the lineup and the way they were playing? Because they hit a stretch there where they were not the Vanderbilt. And I've admitted that I was buying into the James Franklin hype and was a little let down that they were playing the way they are. And now they're starting to live up to some expectations there down on West End. And you're right, they could end up with 8 wins, but I think we talked about it last week. You look at the rankings that just came out Sunday, and am I not correct that top 10, but the top 9 programs in the United States, 6 of them are from the SEC?
Yeah, I think the first 3 spots are taken, and then four through nine are – or straight SEC, so it's
You look at that, and 8 wins might not help them in any way, shape, or form. When it comes down to the bowls, they still might end up at a Music City or a Liberty type bowl, only because of everybody else in the SEC is doing so well.
Yeah, to top that off, now you've got just take Mississippi State for instance. I mean, they can beat Arkansas, and if they beat Ole Miss, they're sitting at 9 wins, and, they may be going to the Chick-fil-A Bowl. Some got them going to the Gator Bowl. So it's going to be interesting how this thing all trickles out, if they can get 2 into the BCS, which I think they will, but they won't get them into the – I don't know. It's still all up in the air, but it's going to be an interesting month, which is what makes college football in this stupid system that we have in place a lot of fun.
But really, when it comes down to it, the playoffs, if that was happening this year, it wouldn't change that whole scenario, because, that we have in the SEC the huge likelihood that 2 teams are going to go to the BCS championship, 1 to the championship game and to another BCS game. The same thing would have applied in the top 4 probably in a playoff scenario. So you're still looking at, a Vanderbilt program that would definitely be on the outside looking in of quality bowls. I'm looking here at the records, and something's not.
Yeah, when you take into consideration that you've got Alabama, LSU, you've got Georgia, Florida, South Carolina, then you got Texas A&M, those are 6 teams that, and then if you throw in, Vanderbilt and Mississippi State, who have a shot of getting 8, possibly 9 wins for one of those teams. The Music City Bowl and some of those will be, last year they sat there and got a 6-6 Mississippi State team. This year they could get an 8-win, legitimate team. So it's interesting how it all works out. But we'll see how it works out. But it's going to be interesting over the next 3 weeks.
Yeah, I mean, and realistically, there's just 2 weeks left of games, so we can kind of look at some of these scenarios, and they're starting to take shape. Arkansas, I don't think they have a – do they have a shot? I mean, they've got 4 wins overall. They've got you guys this week. Next week, who do they have? Do you know?
Yeah, I think when they lost the game to Ole Miss in Little Rock, I think that ended kind of their shot of kind of making a run. I think they'll be catching Mississippi State at a bad time in Starkville on Senior Day with a group of seniors, which were Dan Mullen's first signees, and it's going to be a pretty emotional Saturday. So. And they need a win as bad as anybody, and I sure don't see them putting any type of upset on LSU the following week.
Arkansas
is going to be there. Yeah, and right now, I mean, unless Ole Miss beats Mississippi State, in the Egg Bowl, which is always a crapshoot, either team, they could be sitting at the house of 5 wins after that loss for Vanderbilt. So.
Yeah, but Missouri's sitting now at 5-5, and they've got a pretty –
they got winnable games.
Yeah, they've got Syracuse this week, and then next week they don't. They got A&M.
Yeah.
So they have this opportunity to become bowl eligible. So, it's going to be a fun time. You're starting to see some of those – I mean, realistically, you've got 2 bowl positions from the SEC taken up by the new guys that joined the ranks this year. So it's going to be an interesting time when bowl selections handed out. And that's why you see some of those other programs, those bowl teams or bowl headquarters were doing games down at, Mississippi State had some guys down there last week, watching those type of games versus the Vanderbilt. So it's an interesting time for those guys. I think last week we kind of talked about some coaching changes at Kentucky. And if there was anything on the horizon, and if it wasn't sealed last week for Tennessee and Auburn, I think it was sealed Saturday for both of those programs.
And it could only happen in the most dually fashion possible. It's I don't understand how you have Tyler Bray, Justin Hunter, and Patterson, and you decide to just kneel on the ball and not take 2 timeouts to the house at the end of regulation. They lost the game right there. They lost the confidence of the team. And Dooley's explanation that, that they had nothing on the first down. They threw the little screen pass on second down and basically got nothing. And that he didn't want to punt the ball back to them. That's just ridiculous. I mean, you're 3rd and 10. If you're at the 20-yard line, I would understand that. But you're at the 40 and you need 25 yards to give a kicker a realistic shot, and you got 3 guys on the field that can make a play. That's just a – for a guy that knows his defense can't win the game, and he basically made the statement in the second overtime by running a fake field goal because he knew if he kicked the field goal that his defense wasn't going to hold up, how you don't – finish out regulation and try to win the game there, I don't understand. And so it's a shame. I mean, I love it because I hate Tennessee because I'm here in Tennessee. And but, I mean, just horrible way to lose a game. And I just thought it was a very, very poor decision, which is, culminated from all kinds of decisions that Dooley's made this year.
Chris, I know you've got a LSU tag down there, but I know you follow the Vols as well. Did you get to catch any of that game?
I did. What I found most interesting was that this game in particular seemed to be the culmination of every game we've seen Derek Dooley play. Tennessee goes up 21-7. I believe they even jumped out, if I'm not mistaken, to 28-7 at one point. Can someone correct me on that if I'm wrong?
Yeah.
And I think when you're looking at coaching – and you start to say, well, he's had recruiting classes come in now. He's got his players, as we mentioned, Tyler Bray, Justin Hunter, Cordell Patterson's been phenomenal. And then the running game, any coach, I think, if you said, hey, I'm going to give you a 28-7 lead in the third quarter, I think they could win it for you. And you really saw just this preparation when they come out of halftime. It's almost like they go into halftime and they're just hanging around, goofing off, and they make no adjustments, and the other team makes huge adjustments and then comes back storming into the game. I mean, I think they were mentioning how, you know, James Franklin is still coming back from the injury. Looked like he really struggled to throw the ball further than 20 yards, and yet Tennessee couldn't stop him. I think that Tennessee got pushed around by a team that's more of a spread option that, you know, they're not really a power team whatsoever. And it was just a big disappointment to see them just once again kind of collapse when really Dooley needed the team to really step up and him to kind of prove himself if he wanted to come back for another year. And I think everyone in Tennessee, at least from listening to the radio, was sort of like, well, if we lose this, then Dooley's done. So, I don't think that he can say it's not a distraction for the team. And the team doesn't look like they quit, but you got to think something's got to be done. I mean, that defense is absolutely terrible. 700 yards the week before against Troy. And then you're saying you look back at the Akron game and they hung with them. This coaching staff has just been really poor. I don't think you can really look at one of the main three, you know, the offensive defensive coordinator and then the head coach and say, do we really want these guys back? If you're Mike Hart, the athletic director, I think at this point you just want to clean house and say, man, we got to start over from the beginning. And maybe you bring in a coach that convinces Tyler Bray to come back, because I really think he's probably suffering the most from this coaching staff. This is a guy they projected to be a first round draft pick.
I don't think that's a hard sell, because I mean, he's got the weapons and he's done well. I don't know where he is in the SEC. He's probably top four in quarterbacks as far as completions and yards. But there's still a maturity issue that I think's got to get worked out with Bray.
No, well, not only that, but he's fixing to break. I mean, he's got a legit chance to break Manning's season records. I mean, he's putting up numbers that if you have just a mediocre defense, that they win 8 ball games. You know, and I think Chris alluded to the second half was adjustments. I mean, if I'm not mistaken, they held Missouri to something like 68 yards in the first half. I mean, it was – Missouri couldn't do anything. And for them to come out and allow – you know, Missouri, I think, scored on their last 4 possessions of regulation. And I saw today an article where Dorrell Beckham Green or whatever his name is, I can't ever remember his the big wide receiver – you know, the last touchdown pass that he caught,
less than a minute to go.
Right. Yeah. They said that he actually drew it up on his hand in the huddle. James Franklin said that it was funny because he was holding his hand up and showing it. And he said, I was afraid the defense could actually see what he was doing. But basically he came back to the huddle and was like, here, I'm just going to run this fade to the corner. And that's basically what happened. They just left him wide open. And so, I mean, it's a combination of things. And, you know, for Tennessee fans, it's better it happens against Missouri than it does against Vanderbilt or Kentucky, but that sealed the deal for Dooley. And he sealed his fate, I think, at the end of the game when he chose that decision, and he's really kind of passed it off as just kind of a regular thing.
I love the passionate fan base that's in here in Tennessee, doing some stuff with the chamber this week for the day job and for the community here, shaking hands and stuff and talking to some season ticket holders. You know, it's an easy conversation is to talk sports, and it's like, yeah, you know, they're gonna be announcing a coach, you know, today.
Yeah,
it's like, you know, that if they do that, the coaches that they have to choose from it's pretty small. That means that they're currently not coaching right now.
Yeah.
So that's a pretty small pool. And it's not to say that there's not some good coaches out there that don't have a job, but I guess he's thinking Petrino's on his way to Volland. Who knows? But, you know, that's some big.
I still can't get over the Petrino thing. I don't understand how people, I understand that if a person has NCAA baggage, that's a big deal, and it's a lot harder if you got NCAA baggage than if you just have personal issues. You know, hey, you're cheating on your wife, that's not that big of a deal, you know, supposedly from that deal. But I can't see an athletic director being able to, with his past, and that he actually basically broke a federal law by hiring his girlfriend. I mean, that's what the problem is, and I don't understand how people just say, hey, it's going to be an easy thing. I mean, Mitch Barnhart at Kentucky is not going to hire Petrino.
No.
He's not going to put his name on it.
No.
And I don't see Dave Hart doing the same thing. I don't see Auburn doing the same thing. I don't see a big-time program being able to say, hey, it was just a simple HR issue. I mean, this is a guy that freaking hired his girlfriend mistress and gave her a job at a public institution and then lied to his boss about it after he left an NFL team with three games left, after he flew from Louisville to Auburn in secrecy to take that job. And, you know, Louisville had to basically slap his hand and not extend his contract for a year. I mean, he's got a history of this. I just don't understand how people just say, oh, it's over with and he's going to be there. This is kind of off topic, but it's one of the things I just don't understand, how an athletic director with all the political stuff that you have to do, you're going to be able to hire a guy that hired his mistress and basically did an illegal practice that gets anybody fired in America. That's just me, though.
Now, Shane, if I'm not mistaken, the last rumor was he might be heading up to your team there because of his daughter, I believe, plays a sport for Kentucky, if I'm not mistaken.
He can head up to Lexington all he wants, but I think Blair's right. Mitch Barnhart is a pretty smart guy up there at Kentucky. I mean, he's very deliberate in his motions and in his actions. It took him a very long, methodical time to let Joker go, and he did the right thing after that embarrassing loss that Kentucky had at Vanderbilt. But there was a very, very good chance before that Vanderbilt game that Joker Phillips would not have been fired if they could have at least played competitive against Vanderbilt.
Not only that, if they could have just got people to the stadium.
Yes.
That's what ended up his faith. I mean, when you have less than 20,000 people actually scan their ticket to go into a SEC game, I mean, that's what sealed his fate. He even said that. But I just think Mitch Barnhart, I mean, I think if anybody else was at Kentucky other than Mitch Barnhart, I think it could be a possibility where it might make sense for Petrino. And I think that's what people are linking it, just because of the way he took over Louisville and he knows the area. And he went to an area like Arkansas where it's hard to recruit to. It's hard to get kids all the way to Fayetteville, that type of stuff. And, be able to turn the table. But I think Kentucky's going to go more of a young, energetic route that's going to be able to kind of be a Calipari-type, salesy guy that can get some emotion around the program.
I see Sonny Dykes or that Klingsberry. Is it Klingsberry?
Yeah.
You know, that's the two names I like to hear up at Kentucky more than Petrino. And it's not that Petrino can't coach. It's just that – you know, you hear enough hearsay from fans against Kentucky that Calipari is going to be taking banners down at some point in Lexington. You don't want to have to worry about that with both programs. So, Kentucky doesn't have to deal with that kind of baggage. They've got enough quality coaches out there. I mean, you bring up a cat like the offensive coordinator at A&M. Look what he's doing down there. With Johnny Football, you've got to admit that's some exciting football to watch. And there's not a Kentucky fan that's a season ticket holder now wouldn't be rushing to go buy a ticket to think that they could do something like that up at Lexington or even close. They wouldn't even want to beat Alabama on a regular basis or even once. They just want to get that 6, 7, 8 wins and be happy. And that kind of program could get elevated to a higher level because of that excitement. And I don't see Petrino going there. But the other program that's got some worries is down on the plains in Georgia. You know, their defense actually decided to show up in a big fashion and to put a big goose egg up against Auburn there, 38-0.
Yeah, Georgia's playing really well right now. And if they can just ever get Aaron Murray to play a halfway decent game in a big-time game, I think that's the missing piece they have. I think they're running the ball well. They're playing defense more consistently than they kind of went in that lull there earlier in the year before they played Florida. I think if they can just get Aaron Murray to play a top 25 team like he plays everybody else, you know, they could make some noise in the SEC championship game now that, you know, Alabama's got a little bit of a chink in their armor, so to speak. But I like the way Georgia's playing right now. Auburn is just a freaking dumpster fire. It's fantastic and could happen to a better bunch of people. That's just me.
You're just mad that you all weren't able to spend $200,000 to buy a quarterback.
Yeah, that's true. We could have spent it. We were just doing the right thing. They just spent it and didn't get caught. Yeah. That's another topic for another day.
Yeah, it's not like we haven't talked about that one. Go on, Chris. I'm sorry.
Oh, sorry. I was going to say I wanted to comment on Blair talking about Aaron Murray there. I'm having a look at his numbers here, and you see a great completion percentage outside of the South Carolina game where he was down in a horrible 35% and then a Florida game at 50. And that's where you start to wonder, is that where his height's starting to play a factor there? Is it balls being batted down, three picks against Florida, even, you know, somehow Tennessee got a turnover there against him. And you got to think this guy's got all the tools to be successful.
Yeah.
It's just one of those things where, like you said, he's not showing up. You know, right now, I would, and Shane and I talked about looking at it from a pro level at some point. Right now, I would almost see Murray as more pro-ready than Bray in some respects, just because of his toughness and his kind of resilience. I watched him last year at Vanderbilt in Georgia in Nashville, and you just saw kind of a guy there at the end of the game when Vandy had a chance to win it that just really has a never-say-die attitude. But definitely he needs to show something going forward and prove that he deserves to be a quarterback of a big SEC program. And granted, he kind of, you know, fell into the Matthew Stafford shadow there. So, but definitely, you know, it, from a completion percentage, it's really high up there. You know, it looks more on average in the 70s if you were to combine the entire year. It looks like 65.8. So that's for the pro level going into the draft, that looks very good. But it, again, it's not been in those intense games like you were saying, Blair.
But let me throw this out to you. Looking at those stats, and I don't have them in front of me, Chris, but you said the anomalies were South Carolina and Florida. And did Georgia not go down early quick in those games? So now he's trying to have to make plays because the defense didn't show up like they needed to on those games?
Not in the Florida game. The Florida game, if you remember that game, they had like six turnovers in the first half between two teams.
That was sloppy from the beginning. Okay.
Yeah, but he threw those three picks in the first half when they really had a chance to take control of that game. He actually came back in that fourth quarter against Florida, if I remember correctly, and actually threw winning touchdown late in fourth quarter and kind of helped kind of erase a little bit of that, but he still has some tendencies. And you're talking about a Florida team that can get up the field, and you're talking about a South Carolina defense that can rush the quarterback. And so, you know, it was one of those things where
two top 10 programs.
Yeah, I mean, he for some reason when he plays those top 25 teams, you know, everything gets a little bit quicker and everything gets a little bit tighter, and he just hasn't performed well, but. It's going to be interesting. They're playing really well right now, though.
Yeah, it's exciting to see what's going on here in the SEC. And you know, it's now time. I think we've kept everybody in suspense long enough to talk about the game that I think everybody watched. I didn't get any numbers about the viewership on that game versus the Alabama-LSU game. I know there's well over 10 million eyeballs on that one. I didn't get any numbers.
Yeah, this was the second highest rated one behind that one.
So you got to think there was upwards of 9 million plus watching that game, and talk about a great football game to watch. Chris, why don't you talk about that one first?
You know, I think that all of us are probably were just really impressed with Johnny Football. I mean, this guy just does everything you want him to do. I think that when you're looking, again, kind of correlating to the NFL again, when you're looking at how the quarterback position is starting to evolve and that you're wanting a quarterback that throws first but can run, Johnny Football really showed that. And it really seemed like, as good as we know Alabama is defensively, that hurry-up offense, they were not prepared for it. I mean, Texas A&M there for most of the game looked physically able to compete with Alabama, which I think was what I really found to be most impressive, because we saw this team go against Florida, and in the second half they kind of fell apart a little bit. They didn't look as physical. They looked tired. And now I think you're starting to see at the end of the year here that they can really – they've kind of got their legs underneath them and can play four quarters against undoubtedly the best team in the SEC, which was Alabama until Texas A&M knocked them off. I really thought watching this game that Alabama was gonna pull it through in the end. Falling down 20-7, that was really a shocker to me, seeing Bama get down that quick. But yeah, just watching that quarterback play, man, he looked really good, and you saw some of the limitations, I think, of the quarterback for Alabama, A.J. McCarron, just doesn't really have all the tools that you need to make the big throws with the turnover at the end. I believe he had a turnover in the first part of the game as well, and you could really see that when you have two big programs matched up like that, and they really seemed to both play really good defense, they were running the ball well, it came down to that quarterback position, and fortunately for A&M, they had the better of the two.
I think you said that right. I mean, the thing that I took away from it, the thing that Texas A&M does, it makes you actually do things that you don't normally do. And I sat in Starkville, Mississippi the weekend before, and we basically went to a defense that we've never done all year for 1 week against a team, and they just obliterated us. And what it does is their defense is underrated, but the interesting thing that Alabama has that they don't have that LSU and Florida have is LSU and Florida have a defensive front that could actually rush the quarterback. They could get up the field, and Manziel had a hard time if you can rush the passer. What Alabama did, and Alabama just doesn't have a great rush, and what Nick Saban did the whole time was, you know, tell him not to get behind, no, don't get past Manziel, you know, try to kind of corral him and keep him. And they became tentative early. I mean, you saw that. And I think one of the things Saban did that I didn't agree with was he tried to be a little bit stubborn. And every time that they actually subbed on offense, he tried to sub on defense and to slow the game down. And he tried to match personnel with them, and you saw in the second half how he just settled down and they just threw the athletes at them and they kind of stalled them for the most part. But I thought Alabama's biggest mistake was that they got the game back to a 2014 game, and then they just went completely away from the run when they were dominating them on offense by running the football. And then Yeldon makes, you know, he fumbles the ball late there in the game, and then McCarron throws a pick. They do things that Alabama doesn't normally do. And, you know, for all intents and purposes, you know, they had an opportunity twice to win that ball game and made critical errors that they don't normally make. And it just shows you, no matter I think LSU had a lot to do with it the week before because you saw the emotion that Alabama had after beating that LSU. And it's just hard for a team to get back up. And I think you saw that with Mississippi State going into Baton Rouge as well, even on LSU's side, losing a game that well to kind of there for the first part of the game. You know, you just can't get back up to in that type of atmosphere the following week. And Johnny Manziel, I'll tell you what, he's impressive because he's not an NFL quarterback, and we're going to see him for the next 3 years. And it's just going to be tough. I mean, he just does things – that just amazed you. And when it was like I was watching the exact same thing that happened to Mississippi State in the first quarter. It was happening to Alabama. I think I text you, Shane, was just like, we may not be as terrible as I think we are.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, he did the same thing to Alabama that he was doing to them. And, it takes a little bit once to see that to kind of get settled in. I think LSU and Florida were the same way. It took them a little bit to kind of get their footing. But LSU and Florida were able to make them kick field goals and not score touchdowns early. And I think that ended up hurting them at the end.
Well, and one of the toughest things that A&M poses to those programs is the fact that it's impossible to replicate A&M's offense when you're preparing for them.
Yeah.
You're just not going to have somebody as talented to play that quarterback on the opposition when you're prepping to be that Johnny Manziel. And,
right.
And so that becomes more difficult because then you're all of a sudden, you know how they always say when you get to the pros, the game speeds up. Well, the same thing kind of happened to all of these programs, to Alabama, to LSU, to Florida in the first half. And I'll give Florida the benefit of the doubt. They did the best job adjusting to Manziel, and the fact that A&M didn't – that was their first game. So,
right.
You know, they didn't have an extra week to get their legs ready for football until they started matching up with Florida. But none of these programs have the talent on the opposite side to replicate that kind of offense. And like you said, it's a one-time thing. That's the only program in the SEC that can run that. And so they're not going to see it every week. They're not going to see it week in, week out. So there is a tad bit of that shock that happens when all of a sudden that game is faster than they thought it was, and all of a sudden he's passed them by.
Yeah, and the other thing that you need to take a look is that they've gotten a lot better over the last 6 weeks. They're not turning the ball over. If you remember, you know, they had back-to-back weeks where they went to Shreveport to play Louisiana Tech, got up 27-0, ended up winning that one 58-56, went to Ole Miss and turned the ball over six times. Ole Miss basically gave them the game, and they ended up, you know, two scores in the last 5 minutes to pull that game out miraculously. It's pretty interesting. I think they're now 6-0 away from home. Their two losses being at home with LSU and Florida. So, a team that has just gotten better and better. Manziel has gotten better and better, making decisions that a freshman typically doesn't make. You know, they're not turning the ball over. They don't turn the ball over. And their defense is very underrated. You know, they got two ends and a defensive front that's getting up the field. You know, they got solid players across the board. And so it just plays right into that offense's hand. So they're just a tough combination right now.
They're a mystery machine.
They are.
So if you saw his Halloween outfit, that might yes. might resonate to you.
Old Scooby.
I'll be the stat guy here for Johnny Manziel here. When you guys were talking about just kind of what he can do and what he brings to the team, he accounted for 345 yards of offense against Alabama, and the team itself, Texas A&M, only put up 418. That means that. Yeah. The rest of his team only accounted for 73 yards of total offense. I mean, yeah. That's incredible. And the week before, he was 440 yards.
Oh, yeah.
So, I mean, and like you said, this is a freshman quarterback. I mean, I can't remember seeing a freshman really take the SEC by storm like this and really come out. And he seemed to – as good as Mississippi State has been this year, and I've been really impressed with them. Hopefully to the Mississippi State fans, their coach doesn't get stolen by Tennessee with their dump truck theory that's going on around the Nashville area about just driving a truckload of money to whoever the coach they want and getting him. But Mississippi State has been really good, but it seems like Manziel, he's like, oh, well, I'm just playing Alabama this week. I can still get, you know, near 350 yards of total offense. I mean, this guy is something special. And he's a lot of fun to watch.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing about it. And when he doesn't turn over the ball like he was turning over early in the year, he's really, really good. I mean, it's just – it's amazing. I mean, I think that game put him – I guarantee you he's going to be in the top five to go to New York for the Heisman just because of that game. He had to beat Alabama at Alabama. And I think everybody's over this kind of age freshman thing. He's doing things that
you were getting ready to take my question, and I'll go on and pose it a little bit further.
Oh yeah,
we all think he's going to get an invitation to go to New York after that performance, but do you think he's going to be able to hoist the trophy at the end? That's my question.
Well, I think what you got to there, you know, AJ McCarron, I think, has fallen out of it, and then I think you've got. I think Notre Dame and Kansas State have a lot to do with it. I think if Kansas State goes on and is undefeated and ends up playing in the championship, I think you've got to give it to
Klein.
Klein. But Manziel's numbers are just ridiculous. And he's got two more games against two defenses that they can just destroy. I mean, he could just put up video game numbers. There's an opportunity that he's going to be.
Chris, you're my stat guy tonight, and you might have these at your hand, but now I could be off base, but I could have swore I heard that Klein's like the 24th best quarterback in FBS or BCS programs. Johnny Manziel is number two. So as good as Klein is, Manziel is just that much better.
And this the only reason I say that, Shane, is I think – I think Colin Klein exemplifies what old school Heisman voters see as a guy that's been there 4 years. He's basically everything in the offense. And here's this guy that's just kind of come in. And I think that goes against Manziel. I don't think it's fair. But I think there's a bigger part in the way the Heisman's set up, and I don't like this, but it's kind of the way, it's kind of the thing with Tebow, when he was the sophomore, and he had that year and everybody said that they were having issues with it. So I think Colin Klein exemplifies that, that, hey, Manziel will have plenty of time to win this type of deal, when I don't really think that that's accurate. I think that plays against him right now, but we got two games left. I think, that was a big stage that he went on and won.
Chris, what do you think?
Let me ask this question, you guys. I'm having a look here. I'm still double checking on the Colin Klein.
You're fine.
Now, does anyone think that Baylor has a chance to beat Kansas State? I think we can all say no.
Is RG3 there?
No.
Yeah.
In the last game of the year is a little interesting. They're playing Texas, which I know Texas is having a down year, but they're playing at Texas, which could be a very tough game.
But the thing about that is, you say Texas is having a down year, but Mack Brown has turned that ship around in Austin. I don't know what their stats look like over the last three or four games, but he's got those guys, for some reason, playing good football again. And that's actually going to be an interesting matchup, because that's a program that was on a fast fall, and they're turning that ship around. They're still a top 25 program because of that. And you're right.
Because of that squeaker that they squeaked out at that 1-8 Kansas.
Sometimes that's all it takes is to squeak one out. But
yeah, but this is the whole thing. College football is always notorious for giving you something that you'll never expect. And so when you're sitting at 10-0, everybody's going to play their best game against you. And if you're not, if you're not an Alabama, if you're not an LSU, if you're not a team that's been there, done that, and understand the environment, anything can happen. So yeah, what I think Baylor could do it, but I could, could Baylor drop 45 points on anybody? They could, just because of the way their offense is. But, that Texas, that would be a pretty tough game. And really could be Mack Brown's kind of statement to kind of solidify that deal and kind of shut up his
detractors.
Yeah, detractors. But it's going to be interesting. The thing about Manziel that's so interesting is he's a leading rusher in the SEC as a quarterback, and then he's thrown for over 3,000 yards or 2,800 or something like
he's
that.
So close to it.
I mean, it's insane what he's done. But it's a lot of fun to watch. I mean, it's pretty amazing. But we'll see how it works out here in the next couple of weeks, I guess.
So what about Oregon's quarterback? Is he the other big threat for the Heisman for Manziel?
I think it's Barnum, which is the
running back. Okay.
Really the one that I think was the next one. He got hurt a little bit in that Cal game when I was watching the other night. But I can't remember what kind of game he had. They kind of struggled with Cal in that first half and then kind of ran away with them at the end. But I don't know. To be honest with you, I don't know who's going to end up there. This has been kind of a light year for somebody to kind of take the reins and run with it. So I think it's pretty much anybody's ball game.
It's easy to say when it's all said and done, but we wouldn't be able to have anything to talk about after it was all over with.
That's true.
There's two more weeks left, and the bad thing for all of this discussion, at least in my opinion, is that the toughest matchup for those programs that have those other players is going to be in 2 weeks. It's the last game of the regular season. USC is going to be hosting Notre Dame, so Brian Kelly's going over there with Matea? What's the
Matea.
For the defensive guy up there at Notre Dame, and then you've got, like we said, Kansas State playing Texas the last week at Austin. So, that's the bad thing about this is we'd kind of like to see those games this week flip-flopped, but
And then you got Oregon is going to have to play USC again, most likely in this.
In the Pac-12 championship.
Yeah, the championship game. So.
Yeah.
I've got the Heisman from ESPN pulled up here in front of me. It looks like Colin Klein is number one, and then followed by Kenyon Barner from Oregon. A.J. McCarron is still up there. He's dropping a little bit. And then the linebacker from Notre Dame, Braxton Miller, is in the discussion. You know, it looks like it's really Colin Klein's to lose at this point. Yeah. If he goes out and wins, I don't think there's any way you can take it away from him with the way he's performed this year. You know, me personally, I would love to see the linebacker for Notre Dame. I really think that because of Notre Dame's history and the way that we've all been kind of looking at them, oh, you're independent, you need to play more. You know, we haven't seen a defensive player win a Heisman in quite a long time, and I really think that would be great to see. And I think if Klein, that's obviously saying that Klein implodes at this point or just Notre Dame plays lights out for the rest of the season. But there's something to be said for how good that Notre Dame defense has been. And I remember, I think it was Mark Ingram and maybe even Trent Richardson at one point, when Ingram won his Heisman, that they always say this, it's a team award. It's a team award, even though it's awarded to an individual. And wouldn't that be something if the linebacker for Notre Dame, who has really been, in my opinion, one of the most vocal leaders of a defense since probably Ray Lewis, at the linebacker position, not saying he will be Ray Lewis, but the guy's been a lot of fun to watch, and that defense has really brought Notre Dame into the national spotlight again, and for all the right reasons this time.
Yeah, and I think what he needs is a Heisman play. I think he needs – you know, in that USC game, I think he needs to pick off Matt Barkley and take it to the house, or he needs to have a sack and a fumble and recovery, or he needs to make a play that he's got six interceptions because he had another interception, but it's been one of those things where he's just had six interceptions and that's nothing to shake anything at. But for a defensive player to win it, the ones that have won it before, they usually have a defining play, and I think he needs a Heisman moment. And it's going to have to have them going undefeated, I think, for him to kind of get up in there. But it's anybody's ball game right now, it looks like.
Well, let's kind of switch gears just for a second before we look at this week's games. There's only three games in the SEC, so we're not a whole lot to talk about as far as, and I say three games, there's only three interconference games. There's almost everybody's in action. It's just everybody's getting ready for rivalry week next week. That's a tough one to say right there. And so there's only three matchups that we're going to hit up on. But, you know, the one thing that I'm somewhat excited about was that Friday night was the start of basketball. And I know the Kentucky Wildcats, I don't know if anybody knows that there's a basketball program up in Lexington. But they hit the court and – you know, they're not playing any games. They say, let's go play a big program. So we're going to go start Friday and play Maryland. Then we're going to back that up Tuesday and go play Duke. So, I loved being able to sit down and watch a little basketball. My first impression is, man, they're good. But, boy, they're going to make a lot of mistakes. So, it's going to be an exciting ride for as a Kentucky fan on this basketball program. I know, Blair, you've been watching the Coach Cal on ESPN and really get to see how he's coaching, and you're going to have to see him do some more of that. And I was talking to another person about this, and he was talking about how it looks like Cal's mellowed over the years. You know, he seemed much more intense at Memphis, he said. And I told him, it's like, well, he's kind of proven now that his way works, so he doesn't have to work as hard to get these guys to buy in. So if you're telling these individuals, this is what you need to do to be successful, to win, to be able to play at the next level, over the last 4 years, he's really been able to say, this is true, I can prove it. And so they are going to listen a little more, and he doesn't have to be that fierce on the court. But, I'm excited that basketball program is kicked it into high gear. We got another tough matchup tomorrow night, so I'm ready for some basketball Who knows what's going to happen with the Kentucky football. So, Blair, you got anything you want to say? I know you're excited about Mississippi State basketball. You told me how happy you are. How good they're going to be.
To be honest with you, Shane, I actually am excited about watching Mississippi State basketball because it'll actually be a team that is actually coached for the first time in 13 years. but the that was the thing with Stansberry was that, you know, he just out-athletes you. If he couldn't out, you know, he couldn't – if he didn't have the better athletes, he was going to be trouble. And Rick Ray, you know, he's starting behind the ball. I mean, you're talking about four starters from last year's team left before eligibility. Then you lose DeBoss. Literally, when Rick Ray was hired, they did not have a point guard. He had to go get two point guards. One blew out his knee about 6 weeks ago. We've got another true freshman guard.
Oh, did we just lose Blair?
Oh.
Still here.
Oh, you're still there. All right.
But the crazy thing is that you got 9 scholarship players, I think, left now with, I think, 4 of them freshmen, 2 that have actually played at least 1 minute of basketball. So it's going to be a tough year, and I think everybody knows that. But I think Rick Ray, it's been pretty interesting to see. You know, he runs that, you know, that motion offense, you know, kind of like Konzo does. He coached with Konzo at Purdue under Matt Painter. So they run that motion offense. It's just going to be fun watching a guy actually coach and see how this team's going to do. I think they'll win. I think they can win 10 to 11 ball games, and I don't think they're going to finish last in the SEC. But it's always tough when you have to open up on the road at Troy. I was like, you know, don't understand why in the world an SEC team is ever opening up on the road, but we did this year for some stupid reason and lost by 2 or whatever it was. So, but we'll see how it goes. We're going to have a lot of new faces. But other than Kentucky and their illegal show on ESPN that allows them to get recruits and everything else, it's quite ridiculous. But I guess if you're a big-time school, you can just have American Express commercials and everything you want to have, you know, and get that recruiting edge. That's cool. But I don't really worry about basketball until football is actually over.
Well,
I'm pretty sure Chris is that way, being an LSU guy.
Chris probably didn't even know there's a basketball season.
With LSU, the best rumor is that one day once Bruce Pearl comes off of his probation, the head coach. And
that would be a great place for Bruce Pearl.
You know,
see him down in Baton Rouge, 45 minutes from New Orleans.
Man, I grew up in South Mississippi, dude. There are so many basketball players that come out of the state of Louisiana. It is not even funny.
I'm just talking about all the barbecues he could throw.
If Bruce Pearl went to Louisiana, it would be over with.
Bruce Pearl has got to be the best guy for the job. I mean, you know, I listen to him on talk radio a lot, and that guy is just as charismatic as they come. And I think he's still got the drive for it. I know he's still got a home in Knoxville, but I would say we have not seen the last of him. And, hey, we'd be more than happy to welcome him down here for LSU and turn this program around.
I was just glad to see him go because he was definitely a great coach and did a lot of things. And, you know, you can't be mad for him. I don't know. I'm losing words here, but he really does an incredible job getting those guys ready to play. It was a tough matchup every time Kentucky played those guys up at Knoxville. So for that reason, I was glad that he wasn't there and put that program in some disarray for a couple years. For that reason, I was excited. But hate to see that for him. And I'm like you. I think he's going to land somewhere, and it's going to be a good program that he can rebuild like that. That would be a perfect fit for him.
And I'll throw you a bone. You know, what I like is I followed Bruce Pearl just because of how charismatic he was. And like you said, following Tennessee a little bit and kind of saw how he turned that program around. The running joke used to be the women would always beat the men. And I think for a long time that was 100% true. I mean, Pat Summitt was just phenomenal, Hall of Fame coach, as we all know. And, you know, the thing you look at with what Bruce Pearl did and even what Calipari's doing now is really making sure that you play some teams you're going to see in the tournament, because as we know, the regular season, when you're that type of a powerhouse program like a Kentucky, you don't really worry about it. You just try to play the best people out there and make sure that you're ready for the dance. And looking at Kentucky's schedule, they got some good games that are going to be in there early, and then they get prepared to just pretty much run the gamut in the SEC. We all know Vanderbilt probably going to be a little down this year, but they're going to be a tough program. So, yeah, I mean, I think that, it, as Blair said, you know, the illegal program of Kentucky is going to be back into the championship for the SEC and probably in the Final Four. I don't know who could knock them out.
Well, all I know is that ESPN approved that message, so.
Yeah, and so did the SEC, too.
So I'm not too worried about your all's work. You know, if Denver can have pot, you know, we can have a show on ESPN.
Yeah, Peyton Manning can't do any wrong, you know, because he bought, what, 21 Papa John's franchises in Colorado about 10 days before they passed that law. So, the dude's just, he can't make any wrong mistakes.
Is that where those 2 million free pizzas are coming from? Is his
Yeah,
his
that's
stores?
Why he's doing all those Papa John's. Yeah, he got all those franchises. Did you see the this is totally off topic, but did you see the tweet yesterday from the wide receiver after their team meal that they, I guess they're getting on the plane or whatever, was Domino's pizza. And so his wide receiver like took a photo of it and said, I guess the after game meal wasn't approved by our quarterback. So it was pretty funny. I thought it was great.
I didn't see that, but that's awesome. Well, there's only three games that match up SEC opponents, and no real – they're kind of one-sided. I think LSU has Ole Miss. Is that correct?
Yeah.
That's correct.
Who Ole Miss thinks is their biggest rival, but LSU doesn't even know they exist, but that's just
– I didn't even know LSU was playing them until you guys told me. I thought they were playing – some Division II school.
And to tell you what kind of matchups we have this week, that is the CBS prime game that they have at 2:30 Central Standard Time. So we're in for another great slate of games when we talk about the other ones. And that's, you know, originally at the beginning of the season, this was probably a pretty good matchup, and that was Arkansas at Mississippi State. But I think your Bulldogs are easily able to handle things there. And I think everyone else does as well with an 11:20 SEC Network start.
Yeah, I think this is going to be first of all, the blimp won't be there, so we're 0-3 with a blimp, and we're 7-0 without a blimp. So the blimp's not showing up this week. So I feel pretty confident.
Now I know we talked about that on an earlier podcast, but did it make an early exit? Because I'm pretty sure it came up to Nashville for the Titans game. So they rerouted it back up here. I don't think
for
it, the Snoopy one.
Nah, the thing is the MetLife one.
Oh, okay.
The MetLife was the one that covered the ESPN. So we've been on ESPN for three straight weeks and got our butts handed to us. No, I think we'll be fine. I think we did a lot of good things in the LSU game. You know, a couple of mistakes early. I think we didn't really talk about it, but I think Chris can tell you. You know, State came out and, you know, you don't have Ladarius Perkins, which was a total shock to me. He got pulled a muscle injury earlier in the week. And, you know, you're up 7-6 early in that game. You're making a drive and, you know, you run a toss sweep and the guy just fumbles it like it's a hot potato and totally turned the game. And then, you know, last minute of the half allowing him to make two big pass plays down there and a heck of a catch for a touchdown. To end the quarter to go up by 10. But if you saw what Tyler Russell did, 295 yards against LSU's defense. And, you know, it was the things that drove me crazy, Shane, last week. I mean, I was talking about Texas A&M. You know, Texas A&M, which is coming straight up the field on Mississippi State, and Mississippi State didn't have a slant. They didn't have a screen. They didn't have a dump out. They didn't have anything. And against LSU, Tyler Russell basically had all kinds of short game passes, quick decisions, looked like the offense that they were earlier in the year. So they played really well. Our defense is just not as good as it was, as we thought it was going to be. It's underperformed this year, very difficult tackling. But I think Arkansas, who's ahead our number, And Tyler Wilson always seems to have, you know, every Arkansas quarterback seems to have a freaking field day against Mississippi State. But I think this week we're going to be able to take care of business and get a little bit of a win back and take a little bit of momentum into the Egg Bowl.
Well, the good news you can take for that is if Arkansas has always had your number, they've also had it against South Carolina, and they were able to turn that around as well.
Yeah, I just feel confident that they're going to be coming out. And I think if we wouldn't have played as well against LSU, I mean, if you see the score, 37-17, you're like, it's kind of a blowout, but it was a little bit closer of a game. I mean, it was, you know, Tyler Russell's trying to, you know, he's trying to make a play there on fourth down, and only chance he got to even have a prayer, and he's just throwing it off his back foot, and guy takes 100 yards for a touchdown and kind of seals the victory. But, you know, it was, I think they did some positive things and kind of got back to a little bit of what they needed to get back to. And I think the coaches did a better job. I think they did a poor job coaching and preparing for the Texas A&M game, got embarrassed. And I think they did a very good job of setting them up. And we just made mistakes against LSU that you can't make against good teams. So I feel comfortable.
And Chris, we'll let you kind of take us through that last matchup, and that's going to be Tennessee Vanderbilt. That's going to be a home game for Vanderbilt. Is that not correct?
Yeah, that's right, man.
You know, I have made it my mission to always go to that game. There's a couple other SEC games I definitely want to start going to more. And that is always just a really fun, exciting game to go to at the end of the year. Mainly I go to it because usually the tickets are cheap. This year they're a little more expensive. And I think that's because you're seeing a lot of excitement in the Nashville area. I mean, this seems to be the year that Vandy is gonna beat Tennessee. I think Blair alluded to it earlier about, I think before we started, that, you know, he bet on Vandy winning, and I made the same bold prediction. I said, I'm guaranteeing that, you know, by the end of the year, Dooley's probably going to be gone, and or at least almost out the doors. You know, he's kind of hanging on there by a thread. I think we all know what's going to happen. And I really think this is the time where you look at Vandy and you go, this is a team, much like the LSU Tigers, that lays it all out on the field and will just give James Franklin everything they got till the end. And then you look at Tennessee and you go, are you really going to get that? And I think you want to hope that they give out their effort, but they don't play with a relentless effort. And it sounds a little cliche, but whenever you see the six fingers up that Vandy does, and it's the 6 seconds of relentless effort, I really think that team has fully bought into that concept. And I just don't see Tennessee having that same intensity.
Yeah, I'm right there with you, Chris. I think the thing that James Franklin has done, and, you know, the thing that I thought, you know, and Shane, we talked about this earlier in podcast, was, you know, Vandy lost some very impactful defensive players last year, and I just thought it was going to be difficult for them. I thought they're going to struggle to get to 6-6 because they lost some really good football players, and unless their offense kind of picked up, and they didn't start out well. And for them to go to Missouri and then put that string together of games, and, you know, now they've got, you know, they got the big win at Ole Miss. I think coming into this one, James Franklin is going to roll that. I mean, how many times is he going to play that Dooley after game press? Locker room last year where he said that, you know, it's the same old Vandy, and, you know, we're always going to whoop their ass or whatever it is. But he's going to play that up. But, you know, it's pretty interesting to see those commercials now, Shane, that we were talking about 4 weeks ago. They're a little bit different now, and you know, they put this campaign out about Vandy, and I think it's interesting to see that his mojo is kind of going, and I think he even came out and said this week, you know, at some point, you know, everybody is not, it's not going to be the first time we've done this or the first time since we've done that, or it's going to be, this is what the expectation is. And so he's trying to teach people and teach the Vanderbilt basically how to win. And it's a pretty cool thing going on right now.
And that's kind of like what Mullen's trying to do at Mississippi State,
that's
too.
Exactly what Mullen's done for 4 years, is actually try to teach you how to be a winner, because the fan base has just seen so much has been so unsuccessful over the years. So to kind of learn how to actually do that, you kind of got to teach the fan base that. But you know, they're going to have to make kind of go after him and basically open up that checkbook this year, because I think he's going to have some people coming after him after a possible 7 or 8 win season at Vanderbilt.
So another extension in his future?
Oh, I think there's a definite extension in your future. Dude, if you come to Vanderbilt in your first 2 years and you win 6 ball games and then you win and go to a bowl and you come in and – they only won 6 right last year, right?
Yeah.
And then the 7th – or yeah, because they lost the bowl game, right? But you come in, win 7 or 8 your second year, go to a second straight bowl game. Yeah, you've –
But
David
now did
Williams
he,
is going to have to check it up.
Did he not get an extension last year?
Yeah, I believe he did. I think they did give him some extension, but I definitely think they deserve to pay him more. I mean, that's going to be one of those, hey, let's come back to the table again, probably after this Tennessee win.
It's the same thing that happened to Mullen. I mean, in Ole Miss and Mississippi State, you got 4-year contracts is the max you can be for state schools, so they always have to – make a decision at the end of the year anyway if you're going to extend them out. But you know, they did the same thing with Mullen. I mean, he got paid $1.25 million his first 2 years, and you know, once he took you to a bowl game and went to the Gator Bowl, I mean, we paid him $2.75 million, so he's inching close to $3 million at Mississippi State. And so it's just the price of playing in the SEC.
All right, let me ask you guys each a question. It's the same question before we go to our open mic and wrap this thing up for the night. If you had to guess, what do you think that spread opened up at?
Which one? At Vanderbilt?
Yeah.
The Vanderbilt, I think, is -4.
Yeah, so you already saw it.
I think
– they're given 4.5.
That's pretty – and it started at like 3, didn't it?
The site we look at for our picks only opens at 4.5.
Yeah, cause I saw it at some places it was 3. You know, they were a favorite last year. I did not realize that.
I did not either.
Yeah, they were a favorite last year at kickoff at 1.5 Vegas, which because everybody kind of came out asking about that, and Todd Furman confirmed that they were 1.5 at kickoff last year. I thought it was a pick'em by the time it got to kickoff, but
well, it won't be a pick'em this time.
No,
isn't there some deal when it comes to the line where they usually spot the home team 3 points?
Yeah, it's kind of a favor, type deal.
Well, I mean, and anyone who's been to the Vanderbilt Tennessee game knows that most of the time that stadium is painted orange.
So you're saying that's a Tennessee home game, so it's the line's really like 7.5.
Yeah.
I think this year it's going to be a little different.
You know that Tennessee sent tickets back to Vanderbilt, right? Which is the first year that's ever happened, I think. You know, because normally people can just buy them up, but the actual tickets that Tennessee bought.
Their allotment.
Their allotment. They sent some tickets back, and they didn't say how much, but. So that ought to tell you where they're at with regards to the fan base.
Now, wasn't it Neyland was only at 60 or 70,000 this past week for the Mizzou game?
Yeah, they've estimated they've lost. The Missouri was a better crowd than the Troy. Troy, they estimated they lost about $1.5 million in concessions and total impact for that game. And it's what everybody talks about. I mean, you know, everybody talks about opening up a dump truck and paying somebody. But you're not going to pay Derek Dooley when he's the 6th person on the list, because you're basically asking everybody to take on assistance and they're not willing to do it. You're not going to pay that guy $4 million. You're going to pay him $2 million or whatever they paid him. You know, you're going to pay a guy $4 million if Nick Saban comes there. So just backing up a dump truck doesn't necessarily answer the questions. But what happens is that it starts – costing you money in the back end when the team doesn't perform, and that's what's happened until now. Because I think, these last 2 games, they probably lost $2.5 million worth of, you know, money that is, you know, real deal money for an athletic department that needs it.
That's where it comes to a point where they have to cut their losses because they're losing so much money on the back end that it's worth them to pay out that. whatever that buyout is.
Then you couple, the $9.8 some odd million it's going to cost for the assistants and the coach to send them packing while you're still paying two other coaches. So,
well, let's wrap this thing
up. You can't afford to get a third bad hire.
That's for sure.
But it'll be only Hart's first, right?
Yeah, but I mean, you can't afford to have your third disaster.
So there are still two coaches still left on the payroll there at Knoxville?
Well, I don't. I think Pearl and.
Well, you can't count basketball.
Dude, he had a big mess, I think.
Yeah,
but I think Kiffin actually had a. I think Kiffin's, the way they actually did that, Southern Cal actually paid Tennessee their whatever the buyout of his contract was for him making the move. They were able to pay it over like a 3-year period. It's crazy.
So it's not as bad out in Knoxville as we.
They were still paying Fulmer up till last year, I think.
Yeah, but I think he's off the payroll now.
Just in time.
There we go.
To add that $9 million to it.
Well, let's wrap this thing up. We're well over an hour again. It's that time of the podcast where it's open mic or anything that you want to talk about. Blair, let you kick us off.
Well, I'm sick and tired of going to the dentist. I can tell you that much. I'm on my third dentist appointment in the last 6 weeks, so I've had enough of those people until the
end of time.
Till next year, I guess. So, but looking forward to this weekend. I'm looking forward to Mississippi State getting a win back and getting to that eighth win and setting up and getting ready for some holidays, man.
And people can find you on Twitter, I believe. You've actually tweeted a little bit in the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, I think I got total of 9 tweets.
There you go.
It's at Blair Smiley, and that's SMYLY. And I'm mostly a follower, but I'll tweet every once in a while when I get a chance.
But if a certain person gets you riled up, you'll get right back on it.
Yeah, when you get those Bama fans start talking, you know, you just can't ignore the stomping elephants. But.
Well, Chris, anything you want to throw out there? It's sports, not sports. It doesn't matter on the open mic.
You can find me on Twitter. I'm at Into the Gray. And for anyone who's also needing some fantasy football advice, you can find my Twitter handle there and get some info there. Want to give out a little bit of hope maybe to the Tennessee faithful out there because I know they have a great fan base. Having a look at my coach, the Mad Hatter, this is a guy who, when he was at Oklahoma State, went, and I'm looking this as a quote to make sure I get it right, went 4-7 at Oklahoma State, 8-5, 9-4, and 7-5. Nothing of that really jumps out there except for when you get into the meat and potatoes of it and you see he had some really key victories. Then he comes to LSU in 2005 and he goes 10-1. So to all those Tennessee fans out there, and I got a lot of love for them, that are looking for the Bobby Petrino or the guys who've already had success. Les Miles didn't have tremendous success, but what they saw was a guy that could win the big game. So that's what they need to do at Tennessee. They need to have Mike Hart focus on the coach that's winning the big games, maybe in another conference. I know that the head coach out there, I believe Mike Riley at Oregon State, was thrown around, and really take the time, as Blair mentioned, to find the right coach that can come to Tennessee and make them a better program. I don't think many people, with the exception of Shane with basketball, would say they wouldn't like to see Tennessee being a solid program again, because as we all know, what we really want at the end of the year is to make sure that championship comes back to the SEC where it belongs. Granted, LSU fan here, I want to make sure it's in our trophy case, but as long as someone gets it in the SEC, I think that's where most SEC fans root for, is national championship game, one of our teams is in there, we want to bring it back.
I'll spend my open mic. You can follow me at P. Shane Bailey. Kind of playing the opposite of that. That I can agree with you up to a single point, and that is that
you hate Tennessee.
And it's not just Tennessee. Yeah. Yes. For me, I would be happy with any other program if it wasn't Kentucky to be in the national championship and win, except for Tennessee. But every SEC fan out there has that team. For the Auburn fans, it's Alabama. For Alabama, it's Auburn. And so for Mississippi State, it's Ole Miss and vice versa. So everybody has that one team out there. And aside from that program, I would agree with you. But there is that one program that no matter what, you're happier when they lose than when your team wins at some point.
It has made talk radio in Tennessee for the last 3 years a lot more entertaining, but they're terrible.
Yes. And so, guys, thank you all so much for listening in. Again, you can catch this podcast on iTunes. Do a search for SEC Sports. Last time I looked, we were the number one rated podcast on SEC Sports. So thank you all for listening. We could not have been there without folks listening and downloading and liking, doing all the stuff that Apple likes to get us there to number one. So we appreciate that. YouTube, our channel is SECSRT. Same thing with Facebook and Twitter. So you can also get the podcasts in video and audio version there on Facebook as well. And with that, folks, we're going to call this podcast done.